Morning, everyone. We will call this meeting of the Rules Committee to order, and I'll note for the committee record that there is a quorum present. First order of business is approval of the minutes from Friday, May 3rd. Peter Damuth, would you care to move the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Next order of business before us today is Senate File 37, Representative Herr. Before we begin our agenda today, I'll just remind the committee, since we don't have very often substantive bill hearings before the committee, that we are going to have two-minute time limits for testifiers to try to get through as many as we can this morning. And we're going to set a timer for our testifiers, and so once the timer sounds, that will be the time to end testimony. And I will be noting the testifier who is coming up and then the testifier who is on deck so that they can be prepared to come up. And we will first move the bill, get it before us, then we'll have testifiers, and then we'll have time for member discussion. So first, I will move Senate File 37 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it be referred to the General Register. So we have before us Senate File 37. Representative Herr has an author's amendment labeled DE32. I will move the DE32 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Representative Herr, would you care to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Chair Long and committee members. The DE actually puts in the language that we've been working on over the interim, working off of the Senate language, and it actually just includes the specifics of the I don't want to walk through actually in individual things just because until we wait for our discussion, but it just puts the language in the order that we would like to have the discussion on. So,
okay. Any discussion to the DE? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wanted to check, has the language of the DE been heard in any committee anywhere during the process of anything, or is this brand new language coming into the DE?
Representative Nash, this is the Committee of Jurisdiction for Constitutional Amendments. Representative Nash.
What, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was not the question I was asking. Has this been heard anywhere in any other committee in this morphology of the bill?
Chair. Representative Herr.
Chair Long, Representative Nash, thank you for the question. So this bill in, though it's a DE, the majority of it has actually been heard in the State Gov Committee, and this bill, with the exception of a few language changes, has been heard for 6 years now at the state legislature here, so it has been vetted. I guess then I will just point out that the version last year that was passed actually included gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation. That part was already heard. The thing that is different this year is actually the pregnancy outcome piece of it, and then also some of the language around strict scrutiny, which I think many who are lawyers in this space will understand why strict scrutiny. So it's not specifically on just what is being included in this, and so that's really the big change. Otherwise, the majority of the language stays is exactly the same as it was when it was heard through the other committee stops.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been on state government finance for 10 years, and we have not heard this language in its current version in state government. So just putting that on the record and have questions as to why that was skipped.
Representative Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to, as you explained, how we're going to be able to hear testimony with 2 minutes, could you just inform us if that has been communicated clearly prior to the meeting with all of the testifiers?
It has been, Leader Damuth, yes.
So just so I understand, Mr. Chair, thank you. So all of the testifiers were notified that they would be having 2 minutes to be able to testify before the committee?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the path of this bill, has it been before judiciary? This new language on strict scrutiny is something that the Judiciary Committee should hear.
No, it has not gone before judiciary, and I don't believe that this language necessitates a stop in judiciary. We are, as I noted, the Committee of Jurisdiction for Constitutional Amendments, and this language is in the Constitution. I think the fact that a constitutional amendment would need to be interpreted by the courts doesn't give Judiciary Committee jurisdiction. Representative Robbins?
I wonder if Chair Mueller would agree with that. I won't ask her to speak to it, but I think this is a serious legal consideration, and it should be going before the Judiciary Committee, and I would encourage the the committee to think of referring it to judiciary. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further discussion to the DE-3-2, to put the bill... Oh, Leader Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just and I know we'll be hearing this, but just so I understand, looking at the prior bill before the DE-3-2, creed and sex have been removed off of... creed age off of lines 1.16 and 1.17 off of the Senate file look like they have been removed from the DE-2. I know we're going to be hearing this bill, but there is grave concern that this is not going through other committees as needed. We will be getting into that, I'm sure, in testimony, but can you explain why it wouldn't need to move to other committees if we are taking out creed and age specifically?
So, Leader Damuth, it is not a requirement to go back to every committee stop to make a change to a bill. That's not the way we work in the legislature. Typically, it's a courtesy to the author to allow them to get the bill in the shape they want and then to have discussion to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up?
Leader Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, as we have noted in this committee and the fact that this bill is not going through other committees, as we've noted the lack of transparency or pushing back saying that this has been heard by previous committees prior to this legislative session is of grave concern. I understand this language has been worked on for a number of years, but if we have not heard this in the years 2023 and 2024, as we are seeing right now in other committees, I just have grave concerns over the lack of transparency to the public. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Knapp.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be very brief. I just wanted to comment on the process that you mentioned, that your own House File 4598, your own constitutional amendment, made committee stops in elections on 313 and was heard in state government finance on 4-4, respecting the process, going through the process. And this has not.
Representative Nash, this did make committee stops ahead of coming to the Rules Committee, as Representative Herr noted. It was referred back to the Rules Committee after the Senate passed a version of it, and so it is in our jurisdiction right now and before us. Members, seeing no further discussion on the DE.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Herr, you added in on line 1.15, matters regarding pregnancy. And so I'm assuming you mean abortion. So I'm wondering, again, this is a health concern when we're basically codifying, we're not even codifying, we already codified abortion up until the moment of birth, but now we're enshrining it in our Constitution. That is a vast change from previous bills. That's a vast change from the Senate version, and I think it needs to stop in a different committee besides here. We don't have health experts. We don't have abortion experts on this committee, nor do that's not really our purpose. The Rules Committee is supposed to be a procedural committee typically. I know that constitutional amendments come through here. This is the first that I have, you know, I've been on here 10 years as well, and so this is the first constitutional amendment that I've sat on to do a hearing about. But if you're talking about enshrining abortion up until the moment of birth into our state constitution, then I believe this should go to one of the health committees, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rarick, we did hear this bill last year in a committee in a different form, so we have had hearings in the Rules Committee on constitutional amendments. Members, we can have plenty of debate on the underlying provision, but please, it's a courtesy to allow the author to adopt the DE, and then we can get to the discussion. So on the DE-3-2 amendment, I will move that we adopt the DE-3-2 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The DE-3-2 is adopted. Representative Herr, can you explain your amendment, please?
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, committee. And what I would just like to do is to ground us before we start this is that I think, I don't know who was all in this space when we came in today, but Representative Rarick and I, who are on different sides of the aisle, gave each other a really big hug because we know that we have to center love in this work. And that as passionately as we all feel in one position of, you know, whether you are for this bill or against this bill, that we do not have to invalidate each other's stories in order for our truths to be real. And that there are many reasons in which we may feel strongly for each item and that we can also disagree in that, but still center love in that. And so I just want to make sure that as we move forward, for us to understand that this is going to be a hard conversation, and there is a lot of clarification that will be needed. But if we continue to center love in that work, that we'll be able to get through this. And whether we get all the things that we want, or we get none of it at all, or we get some of it, that really we remember that at the end of the day, we are a great state, a state that values equity for all. And it all means everybody, not just some people. And the reason for this ERA is to ensure that there is equality for all individuals. And I will answer questions later on to this bill, but just to answer Representative Rarick's question about the 1.15, is that it is actually not just about abortion. It is actually really about reproductive outcomes. There are many reasons that why people may want to plan for their families, and that as we've seen in states across the country, is that case law is not strong enough to protect our rights. And just as the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and we were told that the Roe v. Wade was as good as law, it was not. It was only as good as law until it was overturned. And so for us to ensure that people's rights are protected in our highest governing tool, and that is our Minnesota Constitution, we are seeing rights being limited across the country, whether it is somebody's right to choose how they want to plan their family, or somebody's right to be an individual for themselves and the process that they may want to go to ensure that they get to have that right to live as they so choose, that we are seeing that being violated against across states across the country. And so this is why the ERA is important. This is not a new concept. It's been around for a really long time. People have been working on this for a really long time, and from state to state, because the federal government said that, the Supreme Court said that they were kicking this back to all the states. It has been up to the states in order to protect people's rights. And that is exactly what we are doing, is we are doing what is being asked of us. And so with that, I know there are a lot of people here today, and I will go ahead and I yield my time. I will take the seat over there so that the people up and on deck can come sit here, and I can answer any questions that we might have afterwards. And I appreciate the committee in advance your willingness to have this really tough discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herb. So we will first begin testimony with Megan Peterson with Gender Justice, and then on deck will be Jason Adkins. Megan Peterson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Morning. Thank you so much, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Megan Peterson. I'm the Executive Director of Gender Justice, and I use she, her pronouns. Gender Justice is a legal and policy advocacy organization dedicated to advancing gender equity through the law. Our state's constitution is a powerful protector of people's rights, and I know that because we represent Minnesotans whose lives have been harmed by gender discrimination in our state courts year after year. And I'm here to urge this committee and this legislature to empower Minnesotans to enshrine in our state constitution the most inclusive possible equal rights amendment. In recent years, we've witnessed a disturbing trend of legislative attacks on the rights and freedoms of marginalized communities across the United States. In 2023 alone, in states across the country, over 1,000 bills aimed at restricting reproductive rights and attacking the rights of LGBTQ people were introduced, with hundreds enacted into law. Some may dismiss these issues as distant concerns, but in very recent history, Minnesota legislators have proposed legislation that would ban abortion, criminalize essential health care for transgender youth, and criminally penalize transgender students from participating in school sports. Even small shifts in our political landscape can result in catastrophic attacks on our rights and freedoms. We are fortunate that our state constitution has served as a powerful defender. Just 2 weeks after the fall of Roe v. Wade, our strong constitutional protections provided Minnesotans a significant legal victory that reaffirmed our right to access abortion care without political interference. We now have the opportunity to add the same level of strong protections against discrimination based on race, color, national origin, ancestry, disability, and also sex. This ERA has widespread support from individuals across Minnesota. In fact, nearly 70% of Minnesotans already support this inclusive ERA. There are few clearer reflections of our values as Minnesotans than our state constitution, and it is the civic right and responsibility of the people of our state to amend it as needed to ensure that it reflects our values as fully and clearly as possible. I urge this committee to empower the people of the state to enshrine our commitment to freedom, fairness, and equal rights in our constitution once and for all. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we will hear from Jason Adkins, and following that, Karina Falls. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. I'm Jason Adkins, Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. Combating discrimination is, in fact, a compelling governmental interest, but we oppose this version of the ERA because, among other reasons, its lack of protection against discrimination based on religion, which should be troubling to all Minnesotans. The practical effect of this omission is that it communicates as a matter of our fundamental law that protecting people from religious discrimination, whether they practice a religion or not, is not a compelling governmental interest, and that claims of anti-religious bias or discrimination by state actors will receive less judicial scrutiny than claims based on other identities enumerated in the text. Almost 80% of Minnesotans identify as religious, and Minnesota has a very diverse religious population, with some of our counties being among the most religiously diverse in the nation. According to a recent Gallup poll, almost half of all Americans claim that religion is very important to them. That is, it is a core part of their identity. These facts underscore the importance of including religion because it provides protection for all Minnesotans, including the religiously unaffiliated, and because anti-religious bias of one type or another is an unfortunate reality. For example, according to the FBI, the anti-religious hate crimes increased 30% between 2021 and 2022. Religious-motivated incidents make up 17.3% of hate crimes. Pew Research indicates that there is not one religious group in the United States for whom a majority of Americans has a somewhat or very positive opinion, with Jewish Americans having the highest at 35%. By contrast, between 20 and 25% of those polled have somewhat or very unfavorable views of Latter-day Saints, Muslims, atheists, and evangelical Christians. Including protections for discrimination based on a person's religion ensure that each of our own biases and prejudices do not compromise the well-being of others whose beliefs and practices are different than our own. This is especially important in the context of policies and practices of state actors, which have to be implemented by our fellow citizens who are not immune from bias. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Karina Falls, and on deck is Kat Roan. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Karina Falls. Good morning, committee. My name is Karina Falls, and I'm a college student here in the Twin Cities. To put it bluntly, I've come to testify before you today because I'm repulsed by the legislative push of the Minnesota House for the so-called ERA. Not only would this enshrine a radical abortion agenda into our Constitution, but it would attempt to deceive young Minnesotans like me into letting that happen by refusing to be honest in the ballot text and shrouding this bought and paid for abortion extremism in deceptive language. I think all of you know that a prohibition of discrimination on the basis of pregnancy is not an accurate summary of this egregious bill. Say the quiet part out loud. It tries to enshrine abortion, a stance 68% Minnesotans oppose, unlimited abortion, into our Constitution by taking us as fools. It's ironic it claims to uphold the idea of personal choice, but then denies Minnesotans the right to informed choice at the ballot box. My generation deserves to participate in the fair and honest government system that we have been taught is the cornerstone of America all our lives. What happened to transparency in government and leadership being by the people, for the people? What happened to democracy? As a college student and a member of Gen Z, I can tell you wholeheartedly that this extreme, unlimited abortion agenda is not something my generation supports. I urge you to question the morality of the deception in this piece of legislation, both for the sake of your sworn truthfulness to your constituents and to earn and maintain the trust of young Minnesotans like me. Please consider the fair legislation you have promised us and reject this abominable unequal rights amendment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next we have... There shall be no applause in the to our audience, please. That is an inappropriate display. We are going to be listening to our testifiers as they come before us, and we will not have outbursts in this room. Next, we have Kat Roan, and then on deck will be Renee Carlson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Kat Roan, and I serve as Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, our state's largest LGBTQ plus advocacy organization. Equality is a Minnesota value. And today in front of us, we have language that could further enshrine that value into our state's constitution. Just over a decade ago, on May 14th, 2013, thousands of Minnesotans gathered here at the state capitol to witness Mark Dayton sign marriage equality here into law. It's one of those beautiful moments where we as a state have been witness to the beautiful promise of change becoming reality. That day represented the culmination of years of conversations around the state at coffee shops and kitchen tables, in places of worship and workplaces about equality. And we as Minnesotans joyfully affirmed our values. It's a moment that still resonates, not just with members of the LGBTQ plus community, but for so many people across this state who were part of that work, who have seen and celebrated the marriages that it made possible, who were partners and participants in expanding our promise of welcome and inclusion as a state. But we can't count on equality as a given. That was made all too plain by the Dobbs decision, which not only upended decades of reproductive rights, but invited a much broader challenge to a whole range of civil rights decisions. This January, our neighbor to the south, Iowa, brought forward a bill that would have stripped gender identity from the state civil rights law. To my knowledge, it would have been the first time a state had removed a protected class from its civil rights code. Hundreds of Iowans showed up, and thankfully, the bill did not move forward. Some have asked why we need to put an equal rights amendment into our state's constitution when so many protections already exist, and I can think of no better examples. I am heartened to see that as legislatures around this country continue to debate not just the rights, but humanity of our population, that we of Minnesota have chosen a different path. Let's continue to take a step forward. Let's pass an equal rights amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Renee Carlson, and then on deck will be Rebecca Delahunt. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Renee Carlson. I serve as general counsel for True North Legal. Among other concerns, this so-called equal rights amendment displaces and erases women. As drafted, this language includes the words sex, gender identity, and gender expression. This undermines women's equality because any distinction based on sex will now get the highest level of judicial scrutiny, making it impossible for many common sense distinctions in the law that benefit women to survive. A person's subjective sense of self, however it is expressed, will be the arbiter, putting programs and opportunities that give women special treatment in legal jeopardy. Women will be the victims of grueling litigation, fighting for their existence as laws that were enacted to protect them will now be used against them. Even the U.S. Supreme Court has held that gender-based classifications that favor one sex can be justified in some circumstances. At this point, the Minnesota Court of Appeals has already twisted equal protection on its head while abandoning all regard for privacy, safety, and dignity of young girls and students in Minnesota. Girls will continue to lose their voice and access to female-only spaces should this ERA pass. A few years ago, I represented a group of high school students in Minnesota. These girls wore gym clothes under their plain clothing all day because the school passed a policy that allowed males into their locker rooms and allowed them to play on women's sports. Claiming this is a rare occurrence doesn't stand. Infringing on one women's rights members is one too many. The committee record contains an executive summary of a litany of harms to women that the so-called Equal Rights Amendment will only perpetuate. After the mere introduction of this legislation last year, a nonprofit organization that serves victims of sexual abuse in Minnesota informed me that they withdrew from a state grant program at the risk of closing their doors because the state created a policy that would force them to house men who identify as women. As legal scholars have stated, the Equal Rights Amendment asks women to abandon privileges they already have in exchange for rights they will never get. Members, this is not equality.
Next, we have Rebecca Delahunt, and then following that, Betty Folliard. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Long and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Delahunt, and I work as the Director of Public Policy with Minnesota Family Council. Under this language, individuals will self-identify gender identity and expression. I'm concerned that the ERA would grant children a constitutional right to so-called gender-affirming care when there are global concerns. Last year, a Forbes reporter noted how longitudinal data collected and analyzed by public health authorities in Finland, Sweden, and England have concluded that the risk-benefit ratio of pharmaceutical and surgical interventions for youth ranges from unknown to unfavorable. NHS of the UK stopped prescribing puberty blockers to minors at clinics in England as of March 2024. New patients can only get prescriptions under clinical trial research. The CAST report found that blocking the release of these sex hormones could have a range of unintended and as yet unidentified consequences, end quote. To our detriment, this issue has become so politicized in the USA that any substantive discussion is often silenced. My second concern with the ERA is that this language prioritizes the feelings of males over women and children's protection. It's no mystery how self-identification of gender plays out in society. Males get priority access to women and girls-only spaces, such as restrooms, locker rooms, domestic shelter placement, and prison. Males take athletic titles previously held by women and girls. The prevailing societal expectation is that women will just be quiet on these issues because it's embarrassing to our progressive culture. Really, we are not going to be silent when girls are being physically harmed by males in athletics. We are not going to be silent when we hear that girls in school allegedly hold their urine to avoid using restrooms because they know that males get access. One male currently in Shakopee Women's Prison is Bradley Richard Servio, serving life for convicted homicide. Is there any punishment more cruel and unusual than imprisoning women with males? Will the ERA protect imprisoned women's rights to speak out against this injustice? I come to you on behalf of many women and children of our state. This is primarily an issue of justice for women and children. Please see our protection as a foundational value of Minnesota and bigger than political points. Please vote no on ERA. Thank you.
Next, we have Betty Foliard, followed by Kathy Blazer. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Betty Foliard, founder of ERA Minnesota, an all-volunteer organization dedicated to passing a state and a federal ERA. And I urge you today to support SF-37 as amended. Since the state's inception, our Constitution has never had an equality clause. Our state constitution was written 167 years ago in 1857, the same year of the dreadful Dred Scott decision that stated that enslaved people were not U.S. citizens. Dred Scott, by the way, met and married his wife at Fort Snelling. Back then, black, indigenous, Latinx, Asian women, people of color, and all women were intentionally excluded from full citizenship. The ERA is designed to rectify historic injustices that too often continue to thwart people's progress. Just as our state has evolved, so has the language of the ERA. The ERA today explicitly offers protections in our strongest legal document to repair systemic inequities, inequalities. It will help to dismantle structural racism, sexism, pay inequity, sexual violence, pregnancy discrimination, health care disparities, the pink tax, and more. Please note the two reports in your packets for more specifics. Attorney General Ellison's task force, the report on expanding economic status of women, and the 2024 Status of Women and Girls in Minnesota report by the Women's Foundation of Minnesota and the Center for Women, Gender, and Public Policy at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School. The ERA today guarantees equal protections under the law for all Minnesotans. Ultimately, with your yes vote today, Minnesotans will get to decide if we as a state value equal rights through our vote, just as 28 other states have done before us. It's time to reach beyond our past to upend the historic stereotypes and systems of suffering, to recognize the full dignity and humanity of all Minnesotans, because the ERA is for all, and all means all. Equality has no qualifiers. And let me just add that as a person of faith, my faith informs my politics. I'm a an elder in the Presbyterian Church. The ERA was first introduced in the Presbyterian Church in Seneca Falls, New York in 1923. So I thank you for your time. I humbly ask for your yes vote.
Thank you. Next we have Kathy Blazer, and on deck is Karen Adante. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. Kathy Blazer, Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. This bill conceals abortion up to birth in innocuous language and attempts to dupe Minnesota citizens who overwhelmingly oppose unlimited abortion into unknowingly voting for just that. Every citizen of this state opposes discrimination against someone based on the fact of their pregnancy. But the actual language, which would go into our Constitution, would provide a fundamental right to make decisions about remaining pregnant with no protection for babies at any gestational age, including healthy but inconvenient, viable babies. 68% of Minnesotans consistently say that they want reasonable protections for babies who feel excruciating pain and could just as easily be delivered alive and thriving rather than aborted. Abortion advocates know if they were truthful about what they are trying to push into our Constitution, Minnesotans across the state and throughout the Twin Cities would vote a resounding no. And so the apparent strategy is to dupe them into voting for something they overwhelmingly oppose. This bill cloaks abortion up to birth under the guise of pregnancy, permanently enshrining unlimited abortion in our Constitution through trickery and deceit, because they know they cannot win an honest discussion on this issue. MCCL will not allow this horrific lie to go unknown. We will continue to do everything it takes to ensure every Minnesotan understands the deceit of the abortion industry. Nor will we allow Minnesotans to lose their rights of conscience, faith, creed, and belief. The advocates behind this language do not believe in equal rights. They are determined to decimate the rights of those who disagree with their agenda. But Minnesotans will know the truth and the purposeful deceit for political gain that is behind this bill, and they will come out in droves to defeat the lies behind this amendment.
Next we have, there will be no additional outbursts, please. Next we have Karen Adante, followed by Dr. Christy Janigal.
Good morning, I'm Karen Adante from Mendota Heights. There are so many issues with this so-called Equal Rights Amendment. A constitutional amendment must stand the test of time, and this one simply won't. The amendment would give constitutional protection for a mother to abort her baby for any reason up until birth, including healthy babies carried by healthy moms. That's just appalling. The proposed wording is complete deception. You at least need to include the word abortion. The word pregnancy alone will deceive voters who won't realize it means abortion up to birth for any reason. Finally, the bill excludes equal rights based on age, religion, conscience, and creed. That just doesn't make sense to leave so many people out. It actually makes it an unequal rights amendment. I always thought when you share factual information, you can change people's minds. But the false things that are being said about people like me, such as we want women to die or we want to deny them life-saving health care, is awful and it's wrong. And things being said to deceive people into thinking that abortion is medically necessary or nothing more than pulling a tooth. It's astounding. All we wanted was for the truth to be believed, and society that loves and cherishes every child, including the unborn and their mothers. We cannot have a constitutional amendment that hinges on these confused and ever-changing beliefs when it must stand the test of time. While I grieve for the mothers and families and the babies destroyed by abortion, I'm most sad for those who promote it. We will each stand in final judgment before God, and I hope I can tell him I did everything in my power to protect these beautiful lives, and I hope you'll be able to do the same. I'll continue praying that one day all hearts will be able to receive and know the truth. Like other injustices in our country's history that dehumanized people, if this bill moves forward, history will not look back on it kindly. Please vote no. Thank you.
Next, we have Dr. Christy Janigo, followed by Mohammed Ahmed. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and some of you have heard from me often this session, speaking on behalf of veterans organizations. Today, I'm not here for them. I'm here for myself, my mom, all female veterans, and all Minnesotans. In the early 1990s, when I was in middle school, my mom was an elementary principal at a rural school district in North Dakota. She was fired for being a woman in a man's world. The school board held a type of hearing where they accused her of things like showing her slip during public appearances, as though she did that on purpose. My mom got a lawyer and sued the school district. She took it all the way to district court here in St. Paul, and she won a small settlement. After that, my family moved all the way across the state so my mom could get away. A woman in a man's world. I'm third generation Army in my family. I served in the North Dakota Army National Guard for 6 years as a water treatment specialist, with some active service in 2003, and I left the military as a sergeant. Now veterans advocacy is my life, and there are veterans of every race, color, creed, gender, identity, and orientation. All 6 years of my military career were marked with regular, demeaning, and sometimes threatening sexual harassment, starting from the very first day of basic training and continuing through my last annual training exercise. I had respect within my unit because my fellow soldiers knew me and the work that I was capable of. But each time I had a drill, a training exercise, or a person from outside our unit with us, that was the source of the behavior. I was very young, a shy Christian girl from North Dakota. I didn't know how to fight back or shut down the behavior like I do now that I'm twice that age. And I knew that eventually sexual assault would happen to me. It was one of the reasons I did not re-enlist after completing my term of service. I wanted to enter civilian life a whole person. Sexual assault is particularly bad in the military community. While in the general population, the statistics are 1 in 4 women will be assaulted at some point in their life. In the military, it's 1 in 3. Appalling and unacceptable, a national security risk. This is a veterans issue. It is not a partisan issue. This is not a man's world. It is everyone's world. And America is the land of the free and the home of the brave. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Mohammed Ahmed, and on deck is Heather Clarkson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Mohammed Ahmed. I'm with the Republic of People of Color, and I'm here to say no to error, and I'll give you my explanation. I have a prepared statement. With the word pregnancy and not the word abortion, you're tricking us. Please understand that. Why would you trick us to fool us? To fool someone is to treat them like fools. We are not. Our people believe in American democracy. That is why we came here as people of color, especially as immigrants. And if your bill would lie to our people and trick us into voting for something that would kill our children, up to birth, why should we ever trust you guys again? The language matters in this era of policy. We're not hateful people. We love our LGBTQ community. And we believe in equal rights because it helps us as people of color. But the language is important because what you're trying to do here, if this bill passes as it is enshrine death culture in our constitution. We are the people of love and we're the people of life. That's our cultural, religious, and values, which are older than this house, this democracy, and even this country. We're not about abandoning. So our request here is, please go back. Rewrite this law. Look at it again. Look at the wording. Don't fool the people. And if you intend to fool the people, we intend to go out and get your constituency to know exactly what you're doing out here, especially our people of color representatives. So, in the words of Representative Ha, we do this out of love and understanding. We're not doing this out of hate. And what we want to say now is, ni hao, good morning, subah wa naksan, sabah al khair, nyo jong, buenos dias. We are waking up and this is where we're making our stand. Thank you so much.
Next, we will hear from our final testifier, Heather Clarkson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Heather Clarkson, and I just found out about this meeting the other day. I'm not a political person, but I come here on behalf of life from God. God, he sent Jesus Christ, God our Father, sent Jesus Christ to die and rise again for our sins, and that is for every life given. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and he shed his sinless blood to take care of our sins, and he has a plan for every person, and they are given. The Ecclesiastes chapter 9 says, who can determine the pathway of the wind, just as the spirit of the infant was put in the infant body while it was in the womb? The Lord Jesus Christ, our Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, Holy Trinity, has given the life from the foundation of the world, and he has a plan for every life, and it is his. And we will be punished if we do anything to take his inheritance, which is his souls coming to heaven for him, away from him, because they are his children. He loves them. He has a plan, a purpose. And if our mothers had aborted us, where would this world be? Where would we be? How would this world be different if we were not here? If any one of us was not here, how would this world be different? We are here for this purpose, for this day. He has put us here where he wants us at this moment, and it is because of his plan for our lives, and because we are his children. He wants us in heaven, and it is a test, this world right now, of whether we will choose to love the Lord or if we will follow after the evil of the works of the devil. And when we go to heaven, we will stand before him, and we will give an account of our lives. And what will he say? Will he say, welcome, good and faithful servant, I love you, you are my child? Or will he say, be cast out into utter darkness, which is burning in hell forever, with tormenting and torture by the devil's demons forever and ever? And there is no rest, no relief from that. It is eternal. And it is God's children that we are murdering if we pass this evil bill. It is not a joke. It is the truth. And we don't have the right to decide. It is God's gift of life. And it is his plan and purpose. And it is his ownership. We do not own ourselves. He owns us. And we must follow after him, because we will give an account and we will have judgment to pay. There will be penalties. There is penalty for every evil. There is justice in heaven and on earth by God for no matter what occurs. But Jesus' sinless blood covers our sin as long as we repent and forgive others and turn from our sins, turn from our wicked ways, and realize the truth of God, which is in the Bible for anybody who wants to know. In Jesus' name, I decree all this over all of us from heaven. God bless you all. Okay.
That is our final testifier. Representative Herr, if you could return to the test bar table, and we will open it up for member discussion. If you would like to be recognized, please raise your hand so that you can let our staff know. Representative Bowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much to Representative Herr for all your work on this bill and to our testifiers today. I just wanted to address something that was said about the right to practice religion. In the Constitution, in our state Constitution, in Article 1, Section 16, it says, and I quote, the enumeration of rights in this Constitution shall not deny or impair others retained by and inherent in the people. The right of every man to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience shall never be infringed. So we have strong protections in our Constitution already for the free exercise of religion, and this ERA does not restrict those rights at all. An individual's right to practice their own faith does not include the right to impose their beliefs on others. Just want to make that very clear. And one of the reasons why I strongly support the ERA is based on gender-based violence. We heard a little bit of those statistics today. About 1 in 4 women in the United States experience intimate partner violence. The statistics are about the same for sexual assault. You can see the handout in your packet addressing in Minnesota the specifics around intimate partner violence and sexual assault. We really need this ERA to help address those and so many other issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the topic of religious exemption or religious disagreement with this has come up, and I was struck by the testifier Kat Rohn's line that equality is a Minnesota value, and I believe that the notion of being able to disagree with this on religious terms is important, and I was just wondering, this strips this away, and I was wondering if the author could tell us why that was done. Because as we move forward on these things, understanding the legislative intent is always important, and I just wanted to have that conversation be part of the inception point of our conversation today.
Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Chair Long, and Representative Nash for that question. So I just want to be very clear, it didn't get stripped away. I want to reemphasize what Chair Mola said, is that Minnesota's Constitution already includes strong protections against discrimination on the basis of religion. Religion and religious beliefs are already afforded the highest level of constitutional protection here in Minnesota. And so putting it in this ERA or not having it in doesn't change those protections. And we wanted to make sure that, I think, as we all, as is included in our packet and as we all have heard in many, many committees we've been on around the other protections of individuals, which create the disparities around income and wealth and health and all of the ways in which we've seen disparities in which women's outcome are much worse than they are for their male counterparts and individuals who are part of marginalized groups, that we want to make sure that we bring all of everyone's ability to live equally as those with religion to have the same rights within the state of Minnesota. And so this is just increasing and bringing forward their rights to a level that would be protected. And so religion isn't actually impacted by this at all, and that's why it's not included in the language. Thank you, Chair Long.
Representative Ash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. I guess we could move on to the notion of creed as well as to why that was removed. That same question, same line of thought. But I do want to ask as an ancillary question, so we'll do a twofer here. What is the potential punishment or ramifications for somebody who would object with this based on religious beliefs? So if you could answer those two questions for us.
Representative Perk.
Chair Long, Representative Nash. So creed is not in this ERA language because that word is currently undefined in Minnesota statute. And so and how creed has been defined expansively has been equated to religion as well. And so because the two are defined similarly, that there was not a need for us to include creed into this. And I just want to be very clear that should we define explicitly beyond religious beliefs, creed beyond religious belief, that any changes in the future of the definition of creed would actually change its impact. And so we thought it's actually safer for us not to include that word into this language. So to your other question, I forgot.
Representative Nash. Thank you,
Chair. We're all trying to get properly caffeinated, so I get it. It was the question relative to a person or organization or group, maybe a doctor or a nurse or somebody who, based on religious convictions, would disagree with what's going on here. What are the ramifications for them from a legal perspective based on your bill?
Representative Perk.
Representative Long, Representative Nash. So I think that this is why it is important for us to pass the ERA language, so that then when situations arise, then we can actually look at what has been passed in previous, laws have been passed, what court cases have already been looked at, and then maybe make an adjustment. I can't predict in any law that we all passed, like, how is the court going to interpret that in the future? How is it going to be applied? How are people going to be impacted by that? That is really why case law exists. And so I think it is important for us to pass it so that we can figure out in the future how will some of these situations in which people have been discriminated against, women who have been discriminated against not being able to access certain rights, that how does that apply to them as well? And so this isn't language is actually really important for us to pass so that we can actually see what plays out in the future depending on what situations arise.
And Representative, just to be clear, the language also is referring to the state, so state actors as opposed to individual actors, is that right?
That is correct, Representative Long.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's another question that I'm sure my team will be bringing up, but I will possibly have a question further, but I would hope that we don't allow religious discrimination to creep into this, because it certainly feels like it is, that people who, and we've heard from multiple different faiths here today, that we don't allow that to take a back seat to the desires that you have in your bill, Representative Herr, because people of faith have been have objections to this, and I don't want a potential your personal objection or the statutory objection to this to take precedence over people's really firmly held beliefs that we cannot, should not, and must not ever invalidate, regardless of the desire that you have in this bill. So I will have questions possibly later, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herr, as we're on this conversation, I'm just wondering, should the courts assume that because it was adopted later, as we were having this conversation, that the claims of discrimination based on this ERA constitutional amendment should prevail in conflicts with other rights protected in the Minnesota Constitution?
Representative Herr.
Representative, can you repeat the question? I'm not sure I understood the question being asked.
Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Herr, since this is being adopted later in our state constitution, does it have now like a higher preference than what's already in our state constitution?
Representative Herr.
Representative Chair Long, Representative, I'm still, I guess, not understanding why this would have any stronger or weight than what is already in our constitution. When we add language to a constitution, it's adding that additional protection. It doesn't invalidate any of the other previous protection that exists. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question correctly, but that is my understanding.
And I guess one note that a concern that I would have is that if we did add religion in, that would be in conflict with the existing case law that has been developed around the religious tests that are currently protected. So I would see that as a potential conflict, whereas there's no overlap here. Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it has to do with creed, because creed is much broader than religion, as you know. It's a firmly held belief. It doesn't necessarily mean a religious belief. And so creed is a much broader term than religion. And other iterations when you've come here before has had creed. In fact, the underlying language before we amended it had the word creed. Creed is so much larger and wider than just religion. So my question is, because we are, you know, if this is adopted later, does now that take a higher precedence over things that are already in the state constitution? That's the question.
Representative Herr.
Chair Long, Representative Rarick, thank you for that clarification. And I just want to be very clear that there is an unpublished court of appeals case defining that term in Rasmussen versus Glass. The court of appeals held that creed only refers to religious beliefs. So a person who is, you know, so I just want to be really clear about, though we look at creed as meaning something different, the court has decided otherwise. And what I want to be sure that we're protected against is that, you know, beliefs can be outside of religious belief, you are correct. But I think that what we also want to try to protect against is a white supremacist, for example, who potentially seeks an exemption from race discrimination prohibitions on the basis of creed. And so this is also not a desired outcome. And so this is why we did not include creed into our language.
Representative Robbins.
Oh,
I apologize.
I'm sorry.
Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I had just a couple other quick questions regarding this. So when we're talking about the public actors, right, so this is focused on government and the public actors as opposed to individual private. So will the ERA then require public funding for gender-affirming care for prisoners who seek gender identity change?
Representative Herr.
Chair Long, Representative Rarick. So this bill actually has no fiscal note and has no appropriations, so it doesn't have any funding to require anything.
Did you have further questions, Representative Rick? Okay, thank Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand that part, but I'm talking about if it goes into effect, can a prisoner who's within this, you know, our state prison system have expectation to not be discriminated against and therefore demand medical care for gender-affirming care?
Representative Rick.
Chair Long, Representative Rarick. So this under Minnesota's current laws that individuals who have health care, their health care covers, like, for example, right now there are under public option care, you can already access things like abortion or the kind of care that you need for your own health. And so depending on which plan, I think that, you know, this is actually something that is more nuanced than just asking a blank question about what would be required to be covered. And so we'd have to look at private plans, public plans, and how things are playing out right now. And I think that if somebody doesn't have it covered, I really think that it should. And I hope that this protects an individual's ability to actually get the insurance that they have to give them the access they need to live the kind of life that they want to with the kind of health care that supports that.
Representative Robbins.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rourke, yes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and that just emphasizes the point where this probably should go to other committees to do, because it certainly has implications on public policy and, you know, far-reaching expenses for the state as a whole as we're expanding what is being essentially required. I think that conversation needs to be had. I'm not saying we're not making that decision one way or another here, but I think that conversation needs to be had. And I do have one final follow-up, and then
final
I'll
turn question.
To Mr. Representative.
Go ahead, Representative.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't quite hear you. Representative Herr, so is it your understanding that the inability to get pregnant or conceive a child is an inequity, and then that would be remedied by the ERA?
Representative Herr.
Representative, can you repeat that question
sure.
again? Sorry.
Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Herr, the inability to get pregnant, so in other words, in vitro fertilization or other methods to help a person get pregnant, is that now a fundamental right if we pass the ERA?
Representative Herr.
Majority Leader Long, Representative Rick, I'm going to pull something that I had written up here, and I just want to make sure that I have the information, I give it to you correctly. And my apologies, because I want to make sure that what we state in here is factual and gives you the answers that you're looking for. So I want to be really clear that the reason why the language is written this way, Representative Long, Representative Rary, is written this way is that pregnancy outcome, it does include things that are just beyond abortion. And so the matters relating to one's own pregnancy, whether it is to become pregnant, including but not limited to like prenatal care, miscarriages, abortion care, childbirth care, postpartum care, contraception, sterilization, infertility care, and lactation, that really it should be broad and it should govern the entire spectrum of somebody's ability to either want to have a family or be able to plan for that family.
Mr. Chair, just a final comment.
Final comment, Representative Rick.
Yeah, I appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chair. We don't commonly do hearings here, so this is how I do hearings. So now you know, I would actually ask 10 more questions in a real hearing, but.
I've been on committees with you before, Representative Rick.
There you go.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chair, this is exactly why this needs to go, this bill needs to go to other committees, because it has far-reaching implications on the expense of what government has to pay for health care, whether it be, we already have abortion up until the moment of birth, it has to be covered by taxpayers. This would expand it far beyond that, including in vitro fertilization or all kinds of other methods to get pregnant. Or to not be pregnant. So we've already got the one end. We've got taxpayer-funded abortion up until the moment of birth. This is enshrining it in our Constitution. And now it's on the other side of it. So now we're going to be, it is a right to become pregnant. So that foreseeably could force the government to pay for in vitro fertilization or other things, or insurance companies. This goes so far beyond where we are today, and I really think that this needs to go to their committees, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Herr. So I have a number of questions and concerns about this bill, so I'll try to focus in on a couple here. First, it was mentioned about the state actor issue and that this would only apply to state actors. So I just would like more clarification on that. If an entity receives state funds, are they then going to be considered a state actor?
Representative Herr.
Representative Long, Representative Robbins, I'm thinking a million things in my head right now, and I think about the purpose of insurance and people's access and the need for insurance, and I guess I'm just a little bit troubled at just the scrutiny of what we give public dollars to and who is funded and who is not when we give public funding and tax exemptions to, and I'm a Christian, and I'm saying this as a Christian, as religious institutions in which, like, my dollars are used in ways that I may not find appropriate, and yet we're thinking of, like, well, you know, what is, who is going to be the state actors. I do believe that if you get public funding and that you are, you do get public funding, that you would be, but I also know that, like, that won't actually be determined until this law actually gets passed, and then there is a lawsuit, and then we are able to look at our laws and say, what does the law say to us, and what do we believe it does, and then there will be a determination of whether it is or not. I can't predict the possible outcomes of everything that might come up as a result of passing a law. We don't do that with any other bills that we have that we pass. We don't do that whether it's a bill passed in the Republican legislature or a Democratic legislature. We can't possibly determine all possible outcomes. And so, I wish that I could give you a definitive answer, but again, I have been called deceptive and somebody who's been hiding things throughout this entire hearing, and that what I don't want to do is give an answer that I can't predict the future and give you something specific to that. And so all I can do is leave it in that space. I do have lawyers here who are experts on this, and I think if they would like to come down to maybe try to guess at that answer, I would be more than willing to allow that. I don't know if Chair Long, if that would be okay with you. I know you have the time restriction as well, so I just want to be thoughtful of that.
Yep, I think you gave the answer to the best of your ability. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, Representative Herr. So to your point, no, we cannot possibly predict all the things that are happening, but this is not just a state law. This will be a constitutional amendment. And I have grave concerns that anyone who gets state funding would now be construed as a state actor under this bill, and I find it very troubling. And I'm going to leave that there, but there are way more questions there that I would like to follow up on. But secondly, the other big concern I have is that this bill seems to be mixing two types of law, right? So by putting in the intent or effect, we are bringing disparate impact theory into this. And then in lines 120, by having compelling government interest, everything is rising to the level of strict scrutiny. And so we're mixing two very different types of legal theory. So we would put everything in this under strict scrutiny. And as I'm sure you're well aware, gender and sex, by Supreme Court precedent, currently receive intermediate scrutiny, not strict scrutiny, because the court has found there are real differences between men and women. So I think this is very troubling that we are giving strict scrutiny to gender in violation of clear Supreme Court precedent and in violation of sort of the facts on the ground that there are actual differences between men and women. So I'd like to have the chair address, or Representative Herr address, why you feel it's even possible to raise this to strict scrutiny for gender when that is clearly in violation of several Supreme Court cases. Thank you.
Representative Herr.
Chair Long, Representative Robbins, thank you for that question. So I don't think that we're trying to do two different things and putting it into one. I think that this is how to make it the most comprehensive and supportive, in that when we stop seeing our trans and queer communities experience death at the rate that we do over very normal things we all might experience every day, the discrimination that they face when it comes to just having access to everyday services, and that the extreme hate that they experience, that I think that I think that that does rise to a level of really looking at strict scrutiny, ensuring that their rights are protected. I don't know why we just limit strict scrutiny to just religion. Religion shouldn't be the only one that gets strict scrutiny, and that if we are looking to provide equity under the law for all individuals, then all individuals will have the same level of scrutiny.
Follow up, Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Herr. I'd like to point out that religion does enjoy strict scrutiny, but you have stripped it out in this amendment. And I would like just to note that for the record. Finally, there's been a lot of concern about saying that this will help women. And I just want to point out that because of how this is drafted, it will hurt women. Women-only places will now be open to anyone, And that will hurt women in domestic violence shelters, in prisons, in schools, in sports. This will hurt women. And, Mr. Chair, I move to table the bill.
Representative Robbins moves to table the bill.
Likes roll call.
Calls for roll call. That's a non-debatable motion. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
Nope.
Chair Long, no. Vice Chair Hollins?
Nope.
Hollins, no. Leader Damuth?
Aye.
Leader Damuth, yes. Representative Engen? Representative Howard?
No.
Howard, no. Representative Hewitt? Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Pawlowski? Representative Rarick?
Aye.
Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Wolgamott?
No.
No. Mr. Chair, there are five ayes and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 nays.
There being 8 nays and 5 ayes, the motion fails. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a number of statements, but before we go into that, I was wondering if Representative Hurt, if you could correct the record, does this invalidate any of our constitutional protections for religion?
Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Representative Long, Chair Long, Representative Jordan. It does not. And I want to repeat again that it does not actually remove strict scrutiny for religion, that does receive the highest protection in our state. Passing the ERA does not change that, and I want to make sure that the record is straight on that. Thank you for the question.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought that was very important to put on the record. But I want to start with, I guess, secondly, I just really want to say thank you, Representative Herr. I strongly support this constitutional amendment because it does protect health care, and it specifically protects health care for people of all genders. And that's because abortion is health care. And in fact, we've seen that we need to actually protect abortion access in our state, because right now 1 in 3 American women have lost their access to abortion and to their health care and their ability to make their own health care choices. You know, we've heard a lot about, right now the Supreme Court has been debating abortion again, and Idaho women have to be evacuated when their health gets so bad because they don't have access to abortion in their own state. They're being medevaced. Texas women have lost their ability to become pregnant, have had internal bleeding, have become sepsis, and have almost died because of their lack of access to this health care. Not having this access to health care is not only detrimental to people's physical health, but it's also detrimental to their mental health. We spent hours and hours and hours debating mental health and the importance of that last week. There's also plenty of testimony and studies in our packets that show the impact that not having this has had on women and people's financial health. We have some of the worst racial and gender health care gaps and pay gaps in the entire country. And so your bill really goes a long way to doing that. I also think it's important to put on the record just that many of the claims that were made about abortion are just completely inaccurate. And they really do not shed light on the actual important decisions that people make throughout their pregnancy. They, you know, this idea, there's just many statements about late-term abortions that are just completely inaccurate. There is, you know, I had a constituent reach out to me to really, and she told me to share this story, that she had an unplanned pregnancy that she didn't know about, and she found out about it much later than many abortion bans across this country have done, and that pregnancy would have been ectopic. And if she had not had, and she needed to get an abortion within 24 hours, or she could have died herself. And if she didn't live in Minnesota, there's not a guarantee that she would have had that access to health care, and she might have died if she had been in one of these states that wasn't doing what you're doing to help us out. So I really want to thank you, because in my opinion, I've said this on the floor, I'll say it again, there's only one politician that should be making health care choices for me, and that's me. And none of us should be making health care choices for other people. And for you to be helping make sure that Minnesotans have access to make their own health care choices is something critical and something that we do need enshrined in our Constitution. So thank you, Chair Herr, and thank you, Chair Long, for having this hearing. I look forward to voting for it.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herr, as I examine the language that passed the Senate with bipartisan support and compare it to the language of your DE, there's one word that's been left out. There are more than one word that's been left out, but one word that I especially identify with, and that's the term age. Age discrimination is a real thing. It happens. I'm uniquely qualified among this group to talk about it, I think. Can you explain to me why, in spite of DFL, you know, we had a big row last year about nursing homes and the necessary funding to keep them viable, and especially in my part of the state. Is this kind of a additional step to ignore the aging?
Representative Hurt.
Chair Long, Representative Torkelson. So our state already allows discrimination by age. We prohibit people from voting. We have age limitation on, you know, when somebody can drink. We already discriminate against people based on age. And so the reason why we didn't want to put that in there is that because it would actually have implications for all of those other laws that that have age restrictions within that. So that's why age was taken out of it.
You know, follow-up, Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Herr. I wasn't thinking of that end of the spectrum. I was thinking of my end of the spectrum, Representative Herr. Age discrimination is a real thing. It happens. People who are of advanced age often cannot defend themselves, and they deserve protection just like everyone else. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this bill forward. I know you've worked really long and really hard on this, and that it took a large group of stakeholders to work out this language, and I really appreciate it. So I have more comments than questions, I think. One of my questions was actually going to be around the around IVF and how becoming pregnant, whether or not that was going to be protected, but I think Representative Rarick actually already asked that question. The things I was really struck by hearing this testimony that we have somehow, or that you have somehow been sneaky or deceptive about this language. And so the first thing I want to say is there's nothing sneaky or deceptive about this language. And in fact, abortion is a winning issue on the ballot. And we've seen it again and again in states that are much redder than our state, that people turn out to actually protect a woman's right to choose. So I don't know why anybody would be sneaky about that, because in fact, folks want to vote on this issue. Places like Kansas, you know, much redder states than we are, who are interested in protecting a woman's right to choose. And so I want to first dispel that notion that we're being sneaky. But the second thing I want to address is the fact that making and effectuating decisions about all matters relating to someone's pregnancy is so broad, and it disheartens me to hear people saying that this is only about abortion. Anybody who has had a baby knows there are tons of issues that come up when you are having a child, from breastfeeding to how you deliver, whether it's a C-section or not, genetic testing that you can choose to accept or not accept or pay extra out of pocket to make sure that you have that information. How to get pregnant, as we talked about. I mean, there's so many different aspects of pregnancy that are fundamental to that experience. And so I think it's really disingenuous for folks to be saying, like, this is only about one thing. It literally says this is about all matters relating to someone's pregnancy. And there are a lot of things that go into a pregnancy and go into giving birth and go into labor and making decisions about that. And so I think this is incredibly comprehensive, and I'm glad it's comprehensive, because when I had to make the decision of having a child, I wanted to have my rights protected, and I wanted to make sure that I knew what I was getting myself into from the moment that I found out I was pregnant to the moment that I gave birth. And there were so many decisions in that point, some of which are not actually protected and some of which certain people get special privileges about. So I'm really happy to see this language in here. I think it's important to protect all of those, and I want to thank you for working on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Our final question will be Leader Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will try to condense my comments here, but I just want to clarify what we just heard. I want to just make sure that everybody listening, everybody watching, knows that the women's right to choose is already protected under Minnesota state law. It is not in question. Sometimes in this body, whether it's in committee or on the House floor, we know that we need to communicate in a way that really defines and describes legislative intent. And that is what we are trying to do, with specific questions to understand, as it appears before me, that we are actually trying to pass a law before, potentially, before we know what it's going to mean and how it's going to apply. But what we just heard, too, is and I'm going to use this phrase that I have not used in this body, but the quiet part out loud. We just heard a member of this committee talk about part of what is being discussed in this committee hearing, saying we know it's a winning issue. So let me get to my questions. Little bit surprised that that actually came out loud, but let me get to my questions, and I do have a number of them, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Herr, thank you for allowing this discussion and the fact that we do have definite questions on this. Thank you for being brave enough to answer our questions. That is appreciated. But can you tell me, Representative Herr, does this create a private right of action?
Representative Herr.
Chair Long, what I would like to do is actually defer that question to our legal who is here, if they could come up and answer that question for Chair Damon. It is my bill, but I heard that comment under the breath, but the truth is that it's my bill, but this bill is actually very complex, and there's a lot of thought that went into this, and that I want to make sure that you get the answers that it is that you want, because I hate to be accused again is not being truthful, not being forward, not giving people the right language that they can work off of, and so in the efforts to avoid that, I would like for Jeff Spraverman to come up and answer some of these legal questions so that you all have the answers that you're looking for.
Jess Braverman, please come forward and introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Jess Braverman, and I'm an attorney with Gender Justice.
Feel free to answer Leader Damon's question.
Sure. So I think the question was about whether there's a private right of action.
Correct.
Okay. So yeah, the intention is certainly that Minnesotans who are aggrieved can come to court and assert their rights. But there's also, you know, it's already true for Article 1, Section 16, when someone's religious liberties are infringed on. It's already true for the area of abortion rights, cruel or unusual punishment. There are already components of the Minnesota Constitution that Minnesotans come to court and say, hey, my rights are being violated. Court, you need to do something about it. And it is the job of the court to adjudicate those cases. So absolutely, the intention here is that Minnesotans who are denied equal rights can come to court. Just as anyone else can when their constitutional rights are denied.
Maybe you can hang out just in case the other questions are legal in nature. Leader Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given the answer that was just given by the testifier, and thank you for the clarification on that, we know that the Senate file, obviously not the same language, but the Senate file was actually heard in Judiciary. Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion that we would refer this bill at this point to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. There and I would like a roll call on that, Mr. Chair.
Be referred to Judiciary. There has been a roll call requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
No.
Chair Long, no. Vice Chair Hollins?
No.
Vice Chair Hollins, no. Leader Damuth?
Aye.
Damuth, aye. Representative Engen? Representative Howard?
No.
Howard, no. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Jordan, no. Representative Lilly?
No.
Lilly, no. Representative Moeller?
No.
Moeller, no. Representative Nash?
Yes.
Nash, yes. Representative Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Pawlowski? Representative Rarick?
Yes.
Rarick, yes. Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Robbins, yes. Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Torkelson, yes. Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Wolgamott, no. Mr. Chair, there are 5 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 5 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. Leader Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The fact that we are not referring this to Judiciary, I'm disappointed in that decision. Clearly, that needs to have a committee stop, but I do have a number of other questions. Going from the earlier testimony that we heard, Representative Herr, the fact that we know that public funding, as you described earlier in your testimony, has to do with pregnancy, infertility, and I just want to clarify before I ask this next question, you do feel that this is going to require additional coverage under those areas for whether it's infertility, pregnancy, abortion, is that correct, Chair?
Representative Herr.
Chair Long and Representative Damuth, I can't speak to the word requiring, and so again, I've already answered this question earlier, and to have me make a decision of whether this requires it or not is not actually a decision for me to make or for me to answer to, so I've already answered the question in the previous individual who asked me a similar question.
Leader Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, we know that that is a very good possibility, and there is absolutely no fiscal note on this. And I would make a motion and request a roll call that we will re-refer this bill to Health, Finance, and Policy.
Representative Damon moves that this be referred to Health, Finance, and Policy and requests a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
No.
Chair Long, no. Vice Chair Hollins?
No.
Hollins, no. Leader Damuth?
Aye.
Damuth, yes. Representative Engen? Representative Howard?
No.
Howard, no. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan, no. Representative Lilly?
No.
Lilly, no. Representative Moeller?
No.
Moeller, no. Representative Nash?
Yes.
Nash, yes. Representative Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Pawlowski? Representative Rarick?
Yes.
Rarick, yes. Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Robbins, yes. Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Torkelson, yes. Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Wolgamott, no. Mr. Chair, there are 5 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 5 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. Leader David.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And given that, I have a few more questions. Representative Herr, could you tell me what state programs that would offer special grants to women-only business? And I am a woman-owned business owner, not a woman-owned. I'm a business owner that happens to be a woman, and I understand the challenges that we have sometimes. Would you tell me, would state programs that offer special grants to female-owned businesses, would those be violating the law if this were to pass?
Representative Hurt.
I guess I'm not sure I'm understanding the intent of the question of asking if it violates the law. Right now, the way the programs work and they are written is that specifically underrepresented groups have not been able to participate, whether it is your business person or whether you are in education or whether you are, whether it's the sector around health, that there are specific fundings that are allocated for many, many reasons when we pass laws to address inequities that exist. And so I'm not quite sure why this is being specifically singled out and being asked about this specifically, because our state already allows us in ways in which we appropriate funds to underrepresented groups to in order to provide a level playing field. I think that this actually enhances it and actually helps it and not hurt it. So that's my best answer. Unless
looked like Jess Perryman wanted to chime in as well.
Oh, sure. We do have a provision. There is a provision specifically in the ERA that would allow the government to make sure that if it wants to remedy historic discrimination, if it wants to fix inequities, it can continue to do that. So if there's a program that provides women businesses with funding because historically women have been denied funding or women-owned businesses have been denied funding, that should still be allowed under the language of the ERA. If it's just random, you know, if the government's like, I prefer people who wear orange blazers, I'll give them money, like, no, that would not be okay. But if it's because historically women have been denied funding, businesses, that sort of thing, then, yeah, the government would continue to be allowed to do that.
And the reference is to lines 2.4 to 2.6. Nothing in this section shall invalidate or prevent the adoption of any law, regulation, program, practice, or benefit designed to prevent or remedy discrimination on the basis of characteristics listed in this section. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Leader Damuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the answer. I don't agree with it, but I appreciate the answer that was given, you know, on line 1.14, just right there where it says sex. I go back to an earlier question that was asked by one of my colleagues, you know, does receiving state fund or state grant funding make someone a state actor, and the fact that we don't have clarification on any of that would make me question, as a female business owner and a person of color, if there would be some type of a grant that later in life I would want to access. I believe that I would be discriminated against under this, and so that is quite disappointing. Next question, Mr. Chair. Let me just see. I am almost wrapped up here. Representative Herr, by not including religion, is this language as proposed discriminatory against people of faith who generally are included in other areas of protected classes?
Representative Herr.
Chair Long, Representative Damon. I'm really sorry, and I'm not trying to be difficult here, but I feel like the questions being asked to me are like, they're like trying to be specific, but like really broad, so that makes it really difficult for me to answer the question. Like, what are the protected classes and what situations are you referring to, Representative Damon?
The question was whether the language would have an intent to discriminate against people of faith. I believe. Is that stating your question correctly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just repeat it. By not including religion on your language, are you discriminating specifically against people of faith?
Representative Hurt.
Chair Long, Representative Damath, no. And again, religion receives the highest scrutiny in our state. There's pretty much nothing I personally can do, and what this language does, that actually takes that away and discriminates against them.
Leader Damath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I just have probably two more questions. My understanding, Representative Hur, is that the AG would have to adjudicate this, what we've been talking about. Can you answer whether or not that is going to be, if that is going to be the case, that we would be dependent on the Attorney General to adjudicate a number of things that we have heard?
Representative Hurt.
Chair Long, Representative Damath, I guess I just want to understand, is Chair Damath, are you Representative, are you referring to like making a judgment or adjudicate? I guess I'm not sure, like I'm not sure the question of what is being asked of what you're looking for.
Leader Damath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hur, it could be either the Attorney General or it could even be the courts. Are they going to have to defend the state in this matter?
Courts don't defend, but Representative Hur to the Attorney General.
Chair Long, Representative Damath, so not every case comes to the AG's office. So I guess I'm just, if it's in our Constitution, just as when abortion was under attack and there were lawsuits against it, he still had to defend it based on the current laws. And so, and because it wasn't protected under the Constitution, I mean, there are positions that AG has had to defend that maybe isn't his personal belief. So I'm not quite sure what the question is, but not every lawsuit goes to the AG, and the AG doesn't take on every case. And so I'm still not understanding then the purpose of the question and what you're asking.
Leader Damath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hur, would the Attorney General need to defend even one case under this bill or under this proposed language?
Representative Hur.
Chair Long, Representative, that AG has to defend every constitutional right in the state of Minnesota. So I don't know why this would be any different than that. It would be his job to do it just like he protects religion under the Constitution.
Leader Damath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. That is actually what my concern was. And given that the Attorney General would have to defend everything, which is exactly what we needed, Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion that we will re-refer this bill to State Government Finance. And yeah. I would like a roll call.
Leader Damath moves the bill be referred to State Government Finance and requests a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
No.
Chair Long, no. Vice Chair Hollins?
No.
Hollins, no. Leader Damath?
Aye.
Damath, yes. Representative Engen? Representative Howard?
No.
Howard, no. Representative Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan, no. Representative Lilly?
No.
Lilly, no. Representative Moeller?
No.
Moeller, no. Representative Nash?
Yes.
Nash, yes. Representative Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Pawlowski? Representative Rarick?
Yes.
Representative Rarick, yes. Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Robbins, yes. Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Torkelson, yes. Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Wolgamott, no. Mr. Chair, there are 5 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 5 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. Peter Damath, any further comments?
Yes. Okay. And I will.
One more question.
I will. Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. One last question, and then I've just got a comment. Representative Hur, are there 34 votes in the Senate for this proposed language?
Representative Hur.
Chair Long, Representative Damath, it is my job to make sure that I have the votes here in the House. It's not my job to work in the Senate. I'm a Minnesota representative.
Leader Damath, closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will tell you, though, as the bill was heard before the DE, I just want to remind everyone that this the Senate language passed last year with 43 votes. It also included creed, age. It had a number of other things. So it did pass. Not this language that's before us, but it did pass. A couple of comments that I want to make in our closing few minutes here. We heard from a testifier. It was the 11th testifier, and Muhammad Ahmed. He said he was opposed to this language, but he said, why would you trick us? Why would you fool us? And I think that was classic. This language that is being proposed is not clear. This has definitely not gone through the process. We have tried in this committee to send this back just to be heard and clarify the questions that we have before us. Not gotcha questions, not trickery questions, but legitimate questions as far as the legislative intent, how this would actually be brought forward. And I have to say that the Democrats in the state of Minnesota, but the Democrats here in the House, have had all session to have had this discussion in an open way, all session to determine what is going to be best for Minnesota. But instead, as it appears to me, you have waited until the very last few days, down to hours left in this session, to determine what should be in the Minnesota Constitution, a decision made for the entire state. But not only that, you've included zero Republicans in those closed door meetings. You have included zero Republicans in a transparent committee process. Instead, you want to jam through an amendment at the very end of session with legitimate concerns, thinking if we push this through, this is a winning issue. We can just slip it in at the very end, make the voters forget, and let's take this up in 26. That is absolutely irresponsible legislating in this place, and I'm very disappointed at the entire process that this has taken.
Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call for this leaving committee.
Roll call being requested. Roll call will be granted. Thank you for a good discussion today, members. I'll just point out before I turn it over to Representative Herr for closing comments that Leader Damuth did correctly point out that reproductive rights are protected in statute. That was an action that we took last year, but I'll note that every single member of the GOP voted against those protections. And we also have seen from the U.S. Supreme Court that protections from the court are not guaranteed either. And we know that legislatures can change, and we know that courts can change. But the Constitution is the one thing that we know will stay in effect. And so this is very clear what the intent is here. We are trying to protect equal rights. That includes equal rights for sex, and that includes pregnancy and pregnancy outcomes. There's no hiding the ball here. Representative Herr has been very clear about what the intent is behind this, and that is because these rights are so incredibly important, and Representative Jordan spoke very eloquently to the effects that we're seeing in other states that do not have these rights protected, and we never want to see that here in Minnesota. Not if the legislature change, not if the courts change. We want to make sure that these rights are enshrined. So thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Herr, and I'll turn it over to you for your closing remarks.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, committee, for this discussion. I do appreciate that. I feel like, though we disagreed, we were very, everyone was very respectful in the process, and I really appreciate that. I do just want to state that this is not a closed-door process, and nobody was trying to hide anything from anyone. This bill has been in front of all of us since I've been in the majority, and that's been 6 years. And this bill has been in front of the U.S., of our country for I can't even tell you how many years. And then the federal ERA since 1973. I was born in 1973. I'm going to be 51 this year. Like, it's time for us to actually do something about it. And we can sort of disagree on, like, what we think might happen, or what is it that it's going to be required of someone else, or, you know, where this might lead to. Like, we'll never know until we actually pass something that really protects all Minnesotans and every Minnesotan, not just some Minnesotans. And I'm going to just address a couple of things that was said today. I really reject the notion in that I'm trying to hide something with this. I don't think I could have been any more public, any more transparent. This is why this is going to legislators are not deciding this. This is why it's going to voters to decide on this. This is not about what I believe. This is about putting the most comprehensive language out there, and Minnesotans can decide. And if you don't agree with it, don't vote for it. And if you do and you believe people's protection should be codified into our Constitution, just like religion is, you should vote for it. And I want to be very clear that even in the language that we even put in the language of what will people be voting on, we're not hiding anything. And it clearly states it's going to be on the count of race, color, national origin, ancestry, disability, or sex, including pregnancy, gender, and sexual orientation. I don't know what I'm trying to hide here when I'm saying plainly this is what it all includes. And I want to just also speak from a perspective of that, you know, of a Christian. My grandfather was the first Methodist pastor, Hmong Methodist pastor in the world, that we fought to be Christians in a culture in which we are the minority. I fought to be here, and I know that when I stand before my God, he will be welcoming me with open arms. I am a woman who had an abortion. I had an abortion because I'm an ectopic pregnancy. And no one gets to decide for me how my God's going to judge me when I get in front of him. My parents were missionary and worked in countries in which women did not have access to planning their reproductive rights, to plan for their family, did not have access to abortion, and were forced to have kids upon kids upon kids in living in poverty. And I've seen what this does. We need to not be as we need to not go back to the places of which women do not have the right to do that. My God will love me, and he will forgive me for the sins that I have committed, not any one of you sitting here today in this audience. And what I will also say is that religion is protected. It is protected at the highest level here, and nothing that I do here today or any of us does or what goes on in the Constitution changes that religion is protected. And for the individuals who said sat up here and said that that we were having these abortions as if we're just killing babies and like they're healthy babies at 9 months and someone just decided to abort them. I want to be very clear. We already have to report abortions in the state of Minnesota and to be made public. And I want to be very clear that late pregnancy abortions are extremely rare here in Minnesota. And the fact is that you don't get to decide if somebody does. It's them and their doctors. And we do not want to be one of those states where women are sitting in parking lots having sepsis because their doctor is afraid to give them the life-saving help that they need, health care that they need. We will not be one of those states. And I want to be very clear that you can go back and look at the data of how many late-term pregnant abortions we have had. Don't take my word for it. Do your homework. Do the research. And so with that, I just, there's so many more things that I could address in what has been said today. And like who has the corner of being righteous and religious and loving and kind. And the truth is none of us do. All we can do is give people the option and the choice to make decisions for themselves. And this will go on the ballot in 2026. And if Minnesotans decide not to, then it won't. And if they do, then we will have the protections that we need for individuals who have traditionally been marginalized, those who are hurt by how we are currently set up now as a state. And for anyone who believes that women are already protected right now, you are sorely mistaken. We have one of the highest disparities when it comes to economic outcome for women, when it comes to income disparities, when it comes to educational outcomes, that women are more likely to be girls are more likely to be expelled out of school than boys are. That we know that the data shows us that they're continually not having the same rights as other individuals. And I can't even tell you about the data around our queer students. If you think that our rights are equal, not protected, you are sorely mistaken. And so I ask this committee, put forward this language so that Minnesotans can decide what they believe is fair and equitable for all people under the eyes of the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Herr. I renew my motion that Senate File 37, as amended, is referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
Yes.
Chair Long, yes. Vice Chair Hollins?
Yes.
Hollins, yes. Leader Damuth?
No.
Damuth, no. Representative Engen? Representative Howard?
Yes.
Howard, yes. Representative Hewitt?
Yes.
Hewitt, yes. Representative Jordan?
Yes.
Jordan, yes. Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Lilly, yes. Representative Moeller?
Yes.
Moeller, yes. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Olson?
Yes.
Olson, yes. Representative Pawlowski? Representative Rarick?
No.
Representative Rarick, no. Representative Robbins?
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Torkelson?
No.
Torkelson, no. Representative Wolgamott?
Aye.
Wolgamott, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 9 ayes and 5 nays.
There being 9 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails and Senate File 37, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Members, we do not have an 11:15 rules hearing today, so this will be our only meeting today. And with that, we are adjourned.